Hello and welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. I'm Paul, your host. This podcast is all about Porsche and their cars and the people and the technology and the engineering that goes behind it. You'll find your Porsche stories, which is us, me, talking to you about your Porsche, your journeys and your life experiences with those cars. Tech Talk, which is all about the technical aspects of Porsche. Waffle, which is just me whittering on about basically anything with some friends. And Heritage, which looks at the entire journey of Porsche from the earliest days to the present day. If that sounds interesting to you, then stick around. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to episode, and I have been not prepared. What episode is this? 47, I think? Let me have a look. This is, drumroll, episode 47. So you'll notice that there was not a release last week, even though we intended on doing it. Mick, you've been ill.
Yes.
I've been ridiculously busy, and I was collecting my car from Dave the Trimmer. If you did listen to the last episode, you'd have heard me freaking out about the fact that I think I'd buggered up the choice of my car. Well, I've got my car back now. Mick, you've seen it.
I have. I bumped into you at Simply Porsche.
Simply Porsche.
I didn't think you were going to make it, so it's a nice surprise to see it.
I wasn't going to make it. It was a very much a last minute, I'm going to go do something. Yeah. So, yeah. What's your take?
It looks spot on.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I didn't realise when we spoke about the seat backs, they're actually Alcantara, and they look fantastic. Mm. And I think you said that you're the only person that's...
I've ever found. Yeah. And look, I'm sure somebody somewhere out there has done something similar. Typically, I think you'll agree, if people do something to do with the seat backs being coloured, it's body coloured paint.
Yeah.
That's typically what they do, unless you've got carbon back buckets, in which case you just leave the carbon fibre alone because it looks great. Because I've got Sports Plus seats, which are like the effectively like a touring seat if you were to buy a GT product, it's the touring seat. I wanted to do something to tie in the green, but I didn't want to do paint because it's been done before. And it just came to me one day, I was thinking, well, why don't I do Alcantara? Because I'm going to use Alcantara in the rest of the car. But then it was a bit of a, what colour Alcantara? Well, green, but what green? When I was at Dave's, when we were going through all the swatches, it looked really dark. And I was like, yeah, cool. The idea of a really dark Irish green, hardly noticeable until you really look at it and then you see it. And when I got some of the photos back from Dave, it looked much lighter. And that's what was freaking me out, is that it looked way lighter.
Yeah, it is lighter.
It is lighter, isn't it?
Yeah, it is lighter. Yeah. But like we said before, it's not like the whole of your inside's green.
Yes.
You've got, you know, the dashboard break, it all breaks up. And yeah. It's, you know, it's all cool.
Yeah.
And I think I said to him, make sure your missus dresses you. Well, on Sunday she did.
She did.
It was colour coded on Sunday.
I'm all about the detail, as everybody knows now. I love it. So feedback generally, it was parked like right in the centre of the event, the car. Yeah. I had quite a few people come and tap me on the shoulder and say hello, which is lovely. But also, if people were kind of around the car and I was grabbing a bottle of water or something to eat, whatever, the feedback generally was really positive. So far, I've not heard anything that's been a critical thought. And yet, it's not for everybody, right? Green interior is not for everybody. Poll I put out on Instagram, 100% of people said yes, they love it.
And at the end of the day, that doesn't matter. It's what you,
true.
You know, it's what you
think. True. So one of the
and I know you always want to get the thumbs up from everybody, but you know, as long as you like it, that's all that matters.
Well, yes, that's true. But at the same time, I started thinking about this probably 2 years ago, I just not mentioned it before. Building the Ren 550 is going to be really expensive. What can I do that's low overhead that actually will contribute to the build cost? So part of that will be a consultancy service, a Rengineering consultancy service to offer support in building other people's cars. So I'm not going to be doing the builds, but if somebody wants to, and by the way, if you're interested in this, DM me on Instagram. The website will be up and running in the next month anyway, so you'll be able to see some of that. You can reach out and I'll support you in building your car for a small fee, not an extortionate fee, a small fee. So there's an element of, yes, it needs to work for me, but actually what I really want to demonstrate, or what I was trying to demonstrate, is actually constraint and kind of a really well-rounded approach to modifying a car is really important. I've spoken to somebody, I'm not gonna mention who they are, that reaches out to me a lot for feedback on what they're doing. And it's the same thing that I keep saying the same thing backwards again. When you're designing whatever that car is, when you bought the car and you're like, I'm going to modify this car, design for purpose. So know exactly what you're going to intend that the intended use for that car is. No point making a track car that is unusable on the road, but you never take it on track. Vice versa, if you build a purely road car and then you take it on track, you're going to find limitations pretty quickly. Styling wise, you know, even that, styling is completely perception and subjective, but mm-hmm. at the same time, building something cohesive is really important. And I keep saying to the same person is, think about what the car looks like at the end, have that really clear image in your head, work to that, right? So that is my this is my demonstration of that, basically. So if you're interested in anything to do with consultancy services or engineering, let me know. Anyway, enough of that. We're not here to talk about my car though, we're here to talk about the 992.2, GTS, cab, and Carrera have been launched. You had time to digest some of the
before we start, Paul. I have a confession to make.
You've done no research.
Forgive me, re-engineering, for I have sinned. I have not been worshipping at the altar of 992.2.
Fine.
But I think I said to you Sunday, I'd made some assumptions.
I think everybody made some assumptions.
When you hear the term hybrid. Mm. You automatically assume it's going to be running on an EV, some form of EV platform. And then when I looked, actually, it's not, I don't really think it's a hybrid.
I don't think it's a hybrid. I think I don't know if it was a marketing genius move to generate lots of negative feedback. All feedback and all engagement is engagement at the end of the day. So by calling it a hybrid and then actually not turning out to be a hybrid particularly, what a class move, you know, from Porsche. So
from the outside, it seems like they've let the engineers loose. It's like an engineer's wet dream, if you like, isn't it?
Massively.
What can we do to call this a hybrid, but not really be a hybrid?
Boost performance, but in a way that is that doesn't radically alter the fundamental underpinnings of the car, because what everybody expects from a 911 is a rear-engined, rear-mounted, rear-biased car. That is, if you remove that and then centralize everything, so all the weight suddenly becomes in the center, you don't have a 911 anymore.
No.
So I think, and naturally, if you're going to have a giant battery pack, even more weight over the back end is going to make that pendulum effect even more noticeable. So you can understand why they've done a move to the front, which then you've got this 50-50 balance, which isn't 911, or in the middle, again, that's not 911.
No.
So really the only thing they could do if they were to be properly biased towards a, you know, bringing a hybrid platform in is to stick it in the boot. And yeah, that would have been horrendous from an engineering perspective.
I mean, from all the things I'd heard, the dot one is so big because it's room for the hybrid systems.
Right.
But I'm looking at it, I'm going, well, they haven't actually put that much more in. They've probably taken stuff out as well. Well, they have taken stuff out as well. And so I don't know what the space is being used for that they've generated to make this hybrid platform.
Unless it is, and we should paint some context here actually, because we've dived straight into the technical, but actually what we're talking about is the 992.2 GTS.
Sorry, the GTS, not the Carrera.
Because the Carrera is still the twin turbo of old, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though isn't it a new designed engine? Is it?
God, here we go. This is where neither of us have done enough research for this. Pause this and come back to you in a minute tiny gap what it is.
What I do know is that they've taken the intercooler off the dot one from, I believe, the GTS or the turbo.
Yeah.
And so they've put a decent intercooler in. So that's in a better position. Mm-hmm. So you can get more cooler air into the engine quicker.
Yeah. Let's move back to the, because we still didn't get the context for the 992.2 GTS. So really what we're talking about here is the technical development, and it is, I think this is like an industry-wide thing that you know, eventually people will use all over the place, is a turbo that has a hybrid element, which hot air from the exit of the turbo is used for regen, and the turbo spools up super quick, or is continually spooled by.
Because it's got an electric motor.
It's got an electric motor firing all the time.
Yeah.
What a genius move.
Yes.
I mean, genuinely, like, that's the difference between turbos of the 60s and 70s, basic, very, very basic turbo, to ceramic bearings, forged this, you know, like, that's the difference. This is such a game changer.
Yeah, so to, I mean, before to fix the turbo leg, they used a smaller turbo. They used twin turbos, didn't they? A smaller one and a bigger turbo for the top end.
That's been done for such a long time, right?
And that's what Porsche had in the 3 litre. They had the twin turbo. And then now what they've done is they've actually got rid of one turbo and they've got the electric motor spinning the turbo up. So they fixed the turbo leg issue that probably was, me or you probably couldn't tell was there.
Imperceptible. But if you were thinking about wanting a normally aspirated feel for a car, part of what, I mean, people either love it or hate it, but part of what gives you that turbo feel is the lag and waiting for the boost to build.
Yes.
Whereas obviously that's minimised by having a small turbo or a pair of turbos, but this will feel like a normally aspirated car. I'm convinced that you'll get into that, you'll put your foot down, and you won't have any idea there's a turbo.
Yeah.
With OPFs and with the cat, it's going to be quiet. So yeah, it's going to feel like a normally aspirated car. Amazing. I've got no critique now of it being a hybrid. Any kind of grumbling that I had before is gone.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's exactly the same. You know, I wasn't really that interested in it. And then all of a sudden, I saw the release video and I'm like, well, where's the hype? There's not that much. They've got two electric motors. One's driving the turbo and one's in the gearbox.
Amazing. So. Yeah, amazing. And the rear axle steer, excuse me, rear axle steer is now standard.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And that's an option. I don't know whether people universally will love or hate that, because I don't know if it's a no-cost option to remove it. I think it's just
It's there, I believe. I didn't go that far into the configurator. But.
You've been on the configurator, right?
Yes.
Let's play.
Yeah.
What was your chosen spec?
So I didn't put that much on, but before you know it, you're up near 150, 160. So
inflation.
I think all I had carmine red.
Yeah.
Because I love carmine red.
Beautiful colour.
I had buckets.
Yeah.
They weren't that expensive, actually.
£5,000?
Yeah,
pounds?
I was expecting them to be more than that. Because like you said, if you want to buy them secondhand, they're
a joke. Yeah.
And I had carbon discs.
Nice.
And then I had the clock in the middle.
Done. And with the GTS pack, so the interior is going to be...
Oh, and Bose.
And Bose.
And Bose, because you can't sell a Porsche without Bose, can you?
You can't. Sadly. You can't. And the irony being, Bose isn't even that great.
No.
I have Bose in my car and it's not that special.
Yeah, I can't hear it in mine either.
So no, I'm not surprised at all. I don't think I'd differ too much from that. I haven't been on the... I've been on the configurator, but not kind of finished a... This is what I'd do. I'll probably pick that up another time and kind of go through what I would personally spec. I can't get my head around 150 grand for a base... Well, not a basic 911, but a... non-GT product 911.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
It's, I mean...
How much was there? So if we wind back the clock 10 years, so we'd be 991.1, exiting 991.1. What, the 80-something, I think?
For a GTS?
For a GTS.
I can't remember.
I think they were in the 80s. Yeah. So we're looking at nearly doubling the price of a 911 in that 10-year period. Now, significantly more technically advanced. Back then it was a normally aspirated engine, fairly formulaic, but that's a lot of money. Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing for me is that they launched the base Carrera, and then the Carrera S comes along.
Yeah.
Then the GTS is about 2 years down the line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Two, maybe a year and a half.
There or thereabouts, yeah.
They come out with the GTS straight away. Which
And if you look at the ads and all the media around it, it's really, really heavily biased towards the GTS.
Yeah.
It's almost like the cab and the Carrera are kind of like playing, and they are playing second fiddle, but the flagship clearly is the GTS product. That's what they're trying to mean.
Yeah, and I didn't really pick up, when I watched the launch video, I didn't really pick up that there was a I thought the Carrera was going to have the hybrid technology as well. And I didn't realize that was a completely different drivetrain. But it's interesting now that there's, between the Carrera and the GTS, is like 140 brake horsepower difference.
Which is crazy.
So, I mean, the Carrera's about 400 and the GTS is 540.
560, I think.
Oh, is it 560?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, so I mean, that's a big jump between the two cars.
We do know, and it's irrelevant really, the kind of brand new phase, or if you want to retain your warranty, but you can take a quick trip to Litchfield, for example, and my Carrera T that I had, basically running the same engine, you can get 520 brake horsepower out of that with a single map. So 1 hour, and you go from 300 whatever it is to 500.
And no other hardware changes?
Zero. Nothing at all. No exhaust, nothing. It's
no,
just
no, no
opening
fuel,
the tanks.
No fuel pump, no...
Nothing at all. And proven to be reliable at that.
Yeah.
So I think power, depending on who you are, if you are a, you know, I want to maintain my manufacturer's warranty for 15 years, that's not going to be the thing for you. But even if you watch the 992.1 reviews of the base Carrera, almost everybody was saying, that's all the car you ever need.
Yeah.
That is all the car you ever need in a 911. So it gets to the point is, it's not a GT product car, the GTS. It's a significant amount of money with a whopping great powertrain, full of tech, but do you really need that? And if you were going to spend that much money, would you rather a lightly used, still maintaining manufacturer's warranty, what can you get for 150k? You can get GT3.
At Bewley on Sunday, Porsche Bournemouth had a GT4 RS for 149,000.
There you go. Okay.
That's
enough for me, right? They're completely different vehicles.
Yeah.
They're very obviously very different vehicles, but a proper hardcore GT4 RS versus a 992.2 GTS. I mean, me personally, I know where my money would go every day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if we think back to the first intro to the podcast episode, horses for courses, right? I've been in the Gold Leaf Performance 981 GT4 with the side intakes, and I've been around and heard a GT4 RS. They are fucking noisy. You are not going to want to do a trip down to Monaco in that car.
Yeah.
Unless you've got your defenders.
Yeah.
A 992.2 GTS will do that, and you'll get out feeling great.
Yeah, so, didn't Harry Metcalf wave his decibel meter around the GT4 RS cabin? It's like 115 or 120 decibels or something like that.
Absolutely obscene, yeah. And Harry, you know, I'm sure that lots of these podcast listeners will probably be a viewer of Harry's garage. He's every road trip he does or every test he does, he always waves the kind of dB numbers around. I think it's a bit of a moot point, really, depending on the car you're in. But yeah, it's the GT4 RS is a hardcore car that's not designed for you to be in comfort. But I know why I choose.
Yeah.
Interior, if you look at the interior of the new car, we've lost any sign of analog dials. They are gone. It's screens galore now.
Can you not get... There's seven different screens you can select.
I don't care.
I was going to ask you this question, right? Because I knew this was going to come up.
Yeah.
Would you buy a digital Rolex?
Absolutely no way.
No, there you go. So it's not for you then.
It's not for me. Progress needs to happen, right? But for me, we are moving completely out of the analog phase, the analog age, into the completely digital age, with haptic buttons everywhere, with giant screens.
Haptic buttons, by the way, do not work.
No, and you. What did you? Was it the
ID3?
ID3.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was a disaster, right?
Yeah, it was a disaster. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, what's interesting is you see some of the manufacturers wheeling back off complete haptic buttons. Gold, like VW in general, are kind of like mixing it up now with a bit of that and a bit of the other. It's going to be like in 20 years' time, more dated than if you had a load of analog stuff everywhere, I think. Because the part of the enjoyment out of interacting with the car, which is part of the reason why I bought a manual, is the interactiveness, the kind of the touch and feel, all of those things matter to me. You remove those things and you go to PDK, I know people are gonna hate me for this, you go to PDK and haptic and screens everywhere, all you're doing is removing the driver out of the equation with that. Now, again, if you're solely interested in crushing miles and doing big continental driving, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't reckon that's the 911 customer for the most part. I think the 911 customer is either a daily, or if it's not a daily, it's an enjoyable car to use at the weekend and some trips. If that's the case, why would you want a load of screens everywhere and haptic buttons? So I know it's progress. And I'm sure when you think about Porsche as an overall brand and they're kind of bringing the new phase of this, you know, or, you know, their interactivity within the car, that'll roll out some of the Can, the Taycan, everything else. For me, it's that step too far. It's that step too far. What about you? I've ranted now. For
No. I knew this was going to come up, so I tried to stay Switzerland on this and think about, you know, why they're doing it. I don't know why they're doing it.
Because everybody else is.
Yeah, it's. They must have a customer they're looking for to sell this to. You know, and is it the younger generation coming through now?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Is it them that they're trying to sell this to? Because the older generation won't. They like their rev counter in the middle.
Your five dials, mate. It's part of the heritage of the car.
I would have been happy with just having an analog rev counter in the middle and everything else be digital around it.
Yeah,
fair.
Yeah.
Just to keep that tick to the old.
Yeah.
But they've gone completely. They've completely.
And the argument is that's why I chose.
That's why I chose the clock.
Yes.
The analog clock.
So there's something, some remnant. You watch though, the 99, it won't be the 993 with it, but the whatever it is, the next one will have a digital clock as well. Then that's the death. The soul vacates the brand at that point when that chrono clock goes. Yeah. I know they're arguing that you can kind of scroll through the multi modes and you can bring up classic design for the dash.
Can we talk about the two seat thing as well?
So they're
selling this as a two seater, right?
They are. They're also quoting a weight loss figure as well, or a weight non-disadvantage.
Yeah. So at Bewley on Sunday, I looked at several GTSs that were there, and there were quite a few there.
Mm-hmm.
They all had rear seats.
Yeah.
Most of them had panoramic roofs.
Yeah.
Most of them are all PDK, which is fine because they're specking their cars up for themselves.
For sure.
Why I don't get why they're pushing, because everyone's going to spec the rear seats. Because I've seen GTSs that have not sold in some of the places around here where they haven't sold quickly because they haven't got rear seats.
Mm-hmm.
So people are going to stick the rear seats in because one, it gives you they're partial shells more than anything, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So when you are going,
and that's a heritage thing, right? You look back to the earliest version of a 901, and you'll see the seats folded flat to add more storage.
So my seats in the back of my 997, they were Velcroed in the back seats. They weighed nothing, and they just dropped down as a pot. So you had basically a bottom shelf and a top shelf when you went away. And that's, you know, they weren't. I mean, I think they used them twice when we got Connor in the back,
right?
And with his knees up round by his ear caps, by his ears, sorry. But that's the only time we used them, apart from chucking stuff on when we went away.
But the standard offering from Porsche is a GTS, and they don't come with back seats.
Yeah, you have to spec them in.
And again, it's a no-cost option to introduce the seats. Yeah. Now, the cynic in me says that they did that solely so they could quote a no-penalty weight disadvantage.
1,500 kilo.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why they did that. It was purely a marketing stunt to make it sound the same. Because they, again, if people read the headlines and they go hybrid, weight penalty, they're going to draw immediate kind of ideas around what that means.
Yeah.
The reality is it means nothing.
Yeah. I mean, they said the 400 volt battery is the same size and weight as a 12 volt battery.
Yeah, box standard battery.
They've obviously got one turbo, but that's got an electric motor. But they've got rid of some of the pulleys that were on. So the air conditioning is now electric, rather than belt driven. So they've made some weight savings there, and I think it's 50 kilo heavier than the last one.
I'll take your word for this, mate.
I think it's 50. It's only 50 kilo, which I was quite surprised at. You know, you've obviously got the electric motor in the gearbox, in between the gearbox and the engine, but you know, they've added a few bits. They've obviously taken some away, and it's only 50 kilos.
It's impressive. I mean, it's a big old barge now. You know, it's, the size of the thing is enormous.
Yeah.
But it's not. Yeah.
It's a new 8-speed PDK.
New 8-speed PDK.
PDK gearbox.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I've got, when I saw the videos, I've got hundreds of questions. I don't want to go and listen to any other podcasts or YouTube because I wanted to have some thoughts of myself. And I'm like, first thing that came into my head was, because this one's at 550 brake horsepower, whatever.
Yeah.
Where's the GT3 going to fit in?
Oh, joke. Yeah.
What are they going to stick in that? Has the manual gearbox gone?
I have it, and not strict. Ooh, do I say this? Yeah, see me. I've heard that, yeah, we won't see a manual GT3. I don't, again, I don't know how.
They tried that before, though, didn't they?
It did not work.
Yeah.
It lasted, less than a year before they kind of went back on that one. So we'll wait and see.
And then Carrera S. That's the question.
Well, we know Carrera's going to sit bang smack in the middle of the Carrera and the GTS.
So would that have the T-hybrid system as well, or would that be...
Good question.
You know, I was thinking the other day... Well,
it would make sense, because the GTS is always the full-fat version of a Carrera S. If you really went to town, you could spec a Carrera S up to a GTS or very close to it.
Yeah. I'd love them. This would tempt me. If they put a 4-litre, normally aspirated manual in the Carrera S.
You're hoping, mate.
I know.
It's a beautiful idea, and I would sell like hotcakes, but not a chance.
Yeah.
My guess is it will be exactly the same as the GTS, minus 30 brake.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then cost options to customise it to yourself. There's more, I think it's fair to say, lots more PTS cars being used now, like at purchase.
Yeah.
It's quite common to see those happen. So, but yeah, I think I've reached out to Porsche Press to see if we can get someone on the podcast. I'm waiting to hear back from that. So that'd be interesting if we get that. I very cheekily asked for a drive in a base Carrera.
What you don't ask for, you don't get, Paul.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we are at the point with the podcast now where we've gone from kind of scratch to...
Yeah.
A live event that's happening in a month. Mr. Mike Brewer has confirmed for just a couple of weeks' time as a guest. So podcast is moving up. It's doing pretty well. And it feels like the right time to start making those requests. Even if they're not back to start with, but I'm on the map. That's good enough for me. So, yeah, we'll wait and see.
Does that mean I'll get sacked?
No, mate. Not a chance. I need somebody to kind of call me out my bullshit. So, yeah. Yeah. Let me know what you're thinking as well. I'll obviously do a post when this podcast episode drops.
What, to sack me?
About whether you want to sack Mick. I don't think that's likely. Or what your thoughts are on the 992.2 GTS and the rest of the range as well. We didn't mention the cab at all.
No. There's one more thing. We didn't mention the Active Aero.
No, that's true. Yeah. And that's quite, again, if you think back to the spy shots, it was the one thing in the spy shots that was left visible.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. But yeah, the front, there's like a multi-slat. I think it's 6 slats per side or 5 slats per side, vertically arranged, that are, fully ducted, active aero. And is there aero under the car as well? Or is it just the front?
All I saw was the front. There must be aero under. There must be.
There must be.
But this, because we've always had issues with our front rads.
Yeah.
And this seems, this might, and we all go for the grill fittings and stuff like that, but that doesn't protect everything. So,
no.
I mean, but those, they're going to be open. So the rads are still open to damage, I should imagine.
Yeah,
but,
And you won't be able to fit Zanspor, the brand that people typically go, unless they do a homebrew version. But you won't be able to fit Zanspor because the flaps need to be able to rotate. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. Incidentally, if you're listening to this and you've had the idea of putting mesh, to protect your radiators, you probably would have found, if you go to get a warranty claim put through, that they go absolutely nuts and say, sorry, you can't do anything, you've got to return the car to standard. They won't sell a car and an approved used car with mesh that's not there originally. Yeah, if you look at other cars in the range, more modern cars, they've all got mesh. So they acknowledge subtly that there's a problem and protecting radiators is important, but they won't let you do it.
I had heard that about Porsche Bournemouth. They were being a bit funny about people who rocked up with grills. Mm.
But it's not just Porsche Bournemouth.
I
think, like everything, every franchise will have a friendly service manager and a not all warranty clerk and a non-friendly one.
Yeah. I can't see how that... I mean, because mine's got grills on them.
Mm.
So I can't see how that can impact a warranty claim.
Take a screwdriver with you when you go for a warranty claim and just be like, they're like, nope, not doing it. Walk out of the car park. And they're factory.
Mine are standard. So,
fine. Okay, so you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all those poor sods that have kind of been susceptible to a perforated radiator as a result of a rogue stone or something going on there. Yeah, not ideal. So I don't know how that's going to affect the new car. You're not going to be able to do anything with it, really. But I'm suitably impressed, though, Porsche. Congratulations on your work so far. Could have been a disaster, narrowly avoided. excellent marketing strategy to piss everybody off before you've even launched anything as well.
Well, it's got everyone talking, isn't it? It's a step on, isn't it? Whether it's an evolution or whatever, it's a step on from when we went air cooled to water cooled.
Yeah. And then we went
turboed, and now we've got electric motors.
Mm. Do you think this signifies a switch to complete electric 911 at some point, other than GT products, or do you think this is kind of where it's going to sit and they'll use other cars in the range to kind of offset with the legislation?
I mean, we spoke before and I didn't get why they were doing the hybrid.
Yeah.
But now actually it makes sense.
It does.
It's not laden it with weight. But they've got the Taycan, they've got the Macan, mm-hmm. the Boxster and Cayman are going to be electrified.
Yeah.
So UK rules are they've got to sell 22% of electric vehicles this year.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, they get £15,000 fine per vehicle.
Yeah.
So this doesn't come into that. So I think the 911s are going to be, they're quite happy selling these till 2035, I think.
Mm. When would the 909s say what typicals that come?
They're going to sell, they've got to sell, they sell a lot more Macans and...
Yeah, yeah. Mostly it's people that want GT products that they want to...
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to have to buy the EVs, aren't they?
They're going to have to buy the EVs, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When the Boxster Cayman gets properly released, we'll have another deep dive on that, because it's obviously going to be important to both of us, because we're both Cayman owners. It's going to be an interesting one, that. I've reached out to my new good friend, Grant Larson, who's head of exclusive manufacture, because I'd love to have his take on some of this stuff as well. So, Grant, if you're listening to this, hello, mate. Get back to me and set something up.
Is he the guy you met in Germany?
It's the guy I met at the petrol station in Germany, yeah. After being crafty and wanting to shoot some footage next to the exclusive manufacturer around the back of the Porsche Museum.
So when you meet him, Paul, one question you've got to ask him.
Go on.
What is the Cayman actually capable of?
Mm.
So, you know, they've obviously winded them back a bit, and you can see some of these other guys, like Litchfield, for example, or, you know.
There's a few places, right? Not just
Litchfield. They push the Cayman to a bit more limits than what it comes out of the box. So Porsche must have done it. They must have pushed it.
They're never going to, the 4RS is the closest we've ever seen, right?
But they must have done something in their mule phase.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that, actually. The non-released version, but the full fat,
if he's allowed to say, it'd be great to find out, what can the Cayman and Boxster,
he's very honest,
actually, you know, what can it actually do out the box if it was given the chance to sell without a 911 restriction being put on it?
If the 911 never existed, what would the Cayman be? Or the Boxster and Cayman be? What's their potential? What's the actual potential? Yeah, that's a proper question. That's like a journalist question, not an idiot question like me.
No, it's
a great one.
Yeah, but it's just what you think. You know, like you, because some people do, they release bits where you can actually modify the Cayman and make it quicker. If they can do that, why haven't Porsche thought of that? You know. They got the Manthe Racing bits you can put on it now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's,
so that's RPM part. Technic are doing those conversions right now. Yeah. Yeah, Manthe, I can't remember what the percentage ownership is now. I think it's 51% owned by Porsche, from memory. So it's a proper Porsche brand.
Yeah.
So, but the development is separate to Porsche. It's just owned by Porsche. So it'd be really fascinating to see, because they're still held to the same sort of tolerances, you know, failure mode analysis, life expectancy per part, all that stuff that you would need to do, they're subject to those sorts of measures. Yeah. So that's the true, you know, what's it capable of is Manthe's version of that. Amazing. How's the GT4, Mick? I heard from Connor that it's barely seen a wheel turn until recently. You slacker.
It's been good.
June.
It got serviced. The big thumbs up to Porsche Portsmouth.
Yeah.
I had it booked in at Bournemouth. It's big service, this one, spark plugs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a Porsche Club meet at Porsche Portsmouth, which Petrol Peb was at. Mm-hmm. And they announced they were doing a 25% off. So I quickly...
25% off?
Yeah, so I got it. It was like a £300-£400 discount on the service.
Wow, that was a nice work.
Yeah, so that was like weeks later. So I was like, okay, so service down there. Yeah, it's going well. We had a good run out the other weekend up to the Renegade Brewery in what is near Reading, Wantage.
Yeah.
And then obviously to Simply Porsche. Yeah.
So the car is just about getting used.
Yeah, just about. Yeah.
Good. Track days booked?
Nothing yet. I was looking yesterday.
All that bullshit about Donington.
I couldn't find one.
Couldn't find a track day at Donington?
No, there's one in October. I think it's 2 days before the wedding anniversary. So we normally go away for our wedding anniversary. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. The car's all right there.
Car's so good, yeah.
No, nothing major coming back from the service?
No.
Nothing at all?
No, rear tyres are getting a bit low, but they're all right for the moment.
They should be low.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Same for me. My car went in for an MOT because it got back from Dave the trim and I completely neglected to get an MOT on it. So the car is now, 2015, so it's 9 years old. So at this point, even a really well-maintained car is going to have some work needed. The only thing it needed was brakes, rear brakes. Well, yeah. As you know, and I think I probably mentioned on the previous podcast episode, I bought big brakes off a 718 GTS. So they are, that's all being done anyway. Other than that though, same thing as you, tires a little bit low, otherwise condition was perfect for the whole car. So yeah, good news for me. Brakes in my car go off to Brake Caliber Refurb. No agreement with them, so I'll be completely honest about the service I receive. I also, the brakes that I had ordered, this 718 GTS set, I'm all about balancing and fairness. So I had a particularly poor experience buying those brakes because they turned up. They were supposed to be from a breaker, from a really well-known breaker actually, but in category A, they're class A basically, and they're, you know, regulated as well, all breakers are. So it should have been perfect. Turned up, a couple of brake pipes crushed, you know, in a bit of a bad way really. Oh. They were going off to be, so Brake Caliber Refurb are refurbing all of them anyway, right? So it wasn't going to be a quick spray job down the local detailing shop. This is a full debuild, rebuild and paint. But credit to that company, I called them out on it and said, actually, this isn't right. You sold me a set of brakes, not for an insignificant amount of money. They don't match the description that you provided. They gave me 250 quid back. Can't say it better than that. No. So they go off tomorrow. They're going to be Irish green as well, and with Rengineering logos instead of Porsche logos on the side of the caliper. Discs, I've ordered, just ordered, gyro disc all around.
Yeah.
So moving from 299mm up front to 350mm up front, and something similar at the back to 325mm. So yeah, massive upgrade all round. Doesn't need anything else doing. It's literally one-for-one swap. So all that content's going to be shot as well. So if you haven't watched any of the episodes yet, you can watch any of the previous build episodes of my Outlaw Cayman on YouTube, Outlaw Engineering on YouTube. But otherwise, yeah, all this new stuff's going to be shot. I've got so much content banked that this episode is the last episode for June, basically. I'm going to take a break. I need a holiday. And I need to start balancing, actually, a lot of the content I've shot over the course of the year so far. Needs to get put out. I need to focus back on YouTube and start releasing some content there. So thank you for listening so far to all the episodes. If you haven't subscribed already, you can do that at Rengineering. If you're on any podcast streaming service and you're using your phone, you can go in and leave a review. That would be really helpful. So far, it's got a 5-star review, this podcast, but your contribution, even if it's 1-star, don't put 1-star, actually, that's really bad. something of a review would be useful. Thank you so much for listening. We're at 38 minutes, which is pretty standard for a podcast episode. I hope you're doing well. If you haven't got any drives booked, the weather is pretty good in the UK at the moment. Hopefully it will stay consistent. But wherever you are in the world, make sure you get out and see your friends and get driving. And we'll see you next time. Take care for now.
Ta-da.
Done.